Hey, this is John Hollis. Want to thank everybody for tuning in and being a part of Rockers in Recovery today. Just so you understand what we do here, Rockers in Recovery Media is dedicated to carrying a message of addiction recovery through music, news, events, and festivals taking place within and not limited to the clean and sober communities. We welcome the several treatment programs and their patients from around the United States that are tuning in today. You know, one thing I've learned over the years, it's going to get better in a little while, and recovery isn't a death sentence, it's a whole new life. I'm John Hollis, host of Rockers in Recovery Radio, and today we have singer-songwriter and musician Bobby Whitlock, who's going to be talking to us about music and recovery. And Bobby, welcome to the show.
Hello. Yeah, thanks very much. Thanks for inviting me.
You know, I've been reading up on you. And it's amazing, your career, your music career. And I think that the message that you have for the recovery aspect of it, especially coming out of the years of rock and roll, and those years of rock and roll was all about, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, correct?
Well, I think that's probably wrong, because when you start doing a lot of drugs, the sex goes, so does the rock and roll, you know. I think that was just some kind of a statement somebody said, and it sounded cool. I've been clean for a long time now, since 2000, October the 13th, 2000. I just had enough of it all, you know. I know it's an ongoing thing. That you have to deal with, but it's a life change for me. I just absolutely was sick and tired of everything, and so I had a pharmaceutical thing going that went started out with some doctors about a ringing in my ear, and I wasn't drinking no hard liquor or anything at the time. I was just, you know, drinking some wine and some beer, a few beers here and there, but I had this ringing in my ear, and went to the doctor. He gave me something for TMJ. They started doing it, and then there was some kind of muscle relaxers, and all this, and then that created some other kind of noises and some other kind of nonsense. And they're mixing some of that Flexeril and some of that other nonsense that they were giving me, and that caused something else. It sent me to another doctor who treated me for some other symptoms or something, and I became my dad was a pharmaceutical junkie, and I only came to terms and dealt with that in the past year and a half. My mom and I were just talking, and because I had three rounds with dealing with pharmaceuticals, and they seemed to all last 9 years. But my mom and I were talking about a year and a half ago about my dad, and he was a squirrely little Southern Baptist preacher who was just, I was ducking, you know, most of my life anything that might come my way that was being thrown by him. He was as squirrely as they come, but could never figure it out. And I quit trying, and, you know, of course, figuring this thing, I had to couldn't carry all that around. So when I was about 30 and had kids of my own, I don't understand. It must have been pretty hard, you know, growing up and having kids and trying to be a minister and live right and everything and set a good example. That was one of these deals that he was doing the best he could with what he had to work with. He's from Pumpkin Center, Mississippi, you know, and his daddy was a moonshiner. So, I mean, he came up hard, and it seemed to warm that for us. But I was talking to my mom the other day, about a year and a half or so ago, and it had to do directly with my dad and his pharmaceuticals. And I told her, I said, I hadn't had even an aspirin since, you know, October of 2000. And when I quit doing that, I quit everything. Well, it was, my life was coming completely unraveled. And I had to stop doing what I was doing. And every time I would take one of those pills or have a drink of wine or something, every time I was wishing that was not, I never had any of it, never got on that roller coaster. And I decided just to cold turkey it. And that I did, and nearly killed me. But it was enough for me to say, all right, that's it. You know, because ever since I was a young boy, every time I did something, I was wishing I'd never done it in the first place. And I'm sure that everybody out there who's listening has had the same feelings about, you know, smoking cigarettes. Jesus, I can't. The thing is with this dang alcohol and pharmaceuticals and tobacco is I can, and all other damn hard drugs, you know, cocaine and heroin and morphine and everything, forget about it. The thing is, I can't believe that I ever did that to my body. This is the only thing that I have that really is mine, and it gets me around and pretty dang good, I might say, considering all the hard knocks it's had. But you know, it's, when my mom said, while he was doing those, he had a medicine. A zip-up medicine bag, you know, a shaving kit, and it didn't have any razor blades in it. It was full of pills, no bottles, just pills. And I remember that from when I was a boy. I just thought it was his medicine, you know. But now this man was getting a squirt, and he was a closet drinker. So he was taking pharmaceuticals before I was born, Mama said. And so she said, oh, he had 26 books right next to the bed. She said, I counted them one time, 26 books. And he'd get in bed and take a couple of pills. He'd be taking something in the morning and taking something in the middle of the day and taking something at night. And she said, and he read all those books, and he would read. She's like, it made me crazy. Well, nobody was going to talk about the preacher being a junkie, you know, a pharmaceutical junkie. And I said to her, I said, well, he was a junkie then. Because, I mean, that's what I had called myself as a pharmaceutical junkie. I couldn't get off of those damn things, you know. Well, number one, they said it would kill me if I come off of them. Well, as soon as she told me that about him, it was like I had a light bulb moment. I went, wow, no wonder. And everything, it was like discovering I'm black, you know, about 6 months ago. That my great-grandma Harrison was a black woman. Her parents were both black. This was my grandfather, Peepaw King's mother was a black woman, but they never said that. You see, then no one ever said anything about that in the family. So I mean, but when I found out that, I remember Grandma Harrison being, she had white features, but she was black as she could be. But I remember that, and suddenly my life was clear. You know, I was clear about everything. Wow,
you definitely,
I was like I had an awakening. You know.
Yeah, you definitely found out, you know, a lot of things that you didn't understand that kind of, you know, put the pieces together over the years.
It did, and then it makes it like, you know, well, life is this has all been a part of my journey, you know. That doesn't mean I have to go repeat it, you know. I've been burned plenty, and I'm ready for the next step, you know. So, I mean, I feel like I'm blessed to have had awakening and the understanding to know what this, what I was doing to my body. And I just decided to heck with it, man. I said, if it's going to kill me, these doctors say this shit's going to kill me to come off it. I wasn't alive. I wasn't living then. You know, that was no life for me. And I said, I would rather die than if that's what's going to happen if I quit everything at once. And I was taking some upwards of 8 different pharmaceutical things, some psycho drugs and all this nonsense, Valiums and Jesus. I can go to heart medicine, first one dang thing and the next. I didn't need any of it. I quit it all. I nearly did die. But I just took it one day at a time. That's too damn long. I just go one moment at a time, and I've been doing it one moment and a heartbeat at a time. And I don't think about alcohol and drugs. I'm too busy with living, you know. And I don't feel like I'm in constant recovery. Now, this may be contradictory to what you say, but I feel like I've recovered. I mean, if I hadn't had anything in all these, I don't even count the years. And Coco has to remind me. She said your sobriety birthday was week before last. And I went, I'll be damned. But I do believe that at some point along the line you got to recover. You know, feel like okay, that's something that's behind me. That was that was part of my life. That was like, you know, smoking in the boys' room when I was a kid, you know. Or
you know, it's funny.
Smoking
it's funny
corn
because there's a lot of
and shit, you know.
Bobby, there's a lot of people that believe that, and I'm one of them also. That you know, there was a point where you know, we do recover and we move forward. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, you know, we talking about the recovery aspect of it. Now going into the music part of it, you have done a lot of work. You were one of the founding members of Derek and the Dominoes, and
yeah,
you were also a writer.
Yeah,
and you were also a writer along with Eric Clapton in regards to Derek and the Dominoes. Did you find that was a rewarding thing in years later, looking back and seeing what, I mean, it's considered one of the best bands and albums that was ever produced, the Assorted Love Songs. So do you feel that's something that to be proud of and you've been able to carry through into your recovery?
I've carried everything I've ever done into my recovery. I'm proud of everything that I've done. And that's just one of them, you know, because there's All Things Must Pass, Exile on Main Street. I mean, and then my four solo records, and I'm getting ready to start. As a matter of fact, and I wouldn't have been able to do this if I'd have still been using. I'd probably have been dead, you know. But November the 7th, I'm going in the studio in El Paso with the great Rob Fraboni producing me.
Wow.
And we're going to do another solo record on me. And I hadn't done that. And yesterday I was talking to Coco and I said, I haven't done a solo record, really, been produced by anybody since Jimmy Miller produced my second solo record, really. And I haven't had a producer. I've always had my hand in the thing, you know. I've always been the co-producer or produced it myself or something like that. This is the first time I ever really let go of the reins and let somebody else go with it. And, oh, man, it's great. We got Charlie Drayden's going to play drums, and Daryl Jones, Stones bass player, is going to play bass. Me and Stephen Barber, who's from here, is a keyboard player. Coco, of course. Myself, Nick Trimless is going to play guitar. We're probably going to have some guest artists on as well, but right now that's the core band. Quite exciting, you know. And of course, Rob Fraboni produced Joe Cocker, You Are So Beautiful, John Lennon. He did Eric Clapton record, you know, Shangri-La, and he built that studio, as a matter of fact. And he's like a world-renowned. He produced John Lennon, so I'm Ben Dylan, you know, Bob Dylan. So I'm in good hands, you know. It was the first time I've ever really been able to like turn loose and let go of everything. Speaking of letting go, that was the key to my sobriety and getting off drugs and everything was. Every time something would go right in my life, I would say, okay, this is happening now, let me do this, you know. But I wasn't in the stream or flow of life, you know. The universe was not operating effectively through me and for me, you know, and as me. I was getting in the way of everything, you know, little Bobby was, you know.
Yeah. Bobby, we're coming towards the end of the segment. What I wanted to be able to do is in the future bring you back on so we can talk more. But most importantly, I want to let people know where they can find you. You can go to Bobby Whitlock and Coco Carmel @.com, correct? And
yeah. Bobby Whitlock.
You can also find Bobby Whitlock. You can find Bobby Whitlock on Facebook. And again, I want to thank you, Bobby, for being a part of the show today. It was awesome.
Yeah.
It wasn't long enough. Next time we'll make it longer. And I definitely, definitely want to hear more about what you've done with your life and the people that you've worked with. And I think our listeners definitely need to hear what you're saying and the message that you're carrying. I want to, again, thank you for being on the show.
I'm happy to have been a part of it, and I didn't mean to ramble on, but
that's
the way it goes.
Hey, listen. Yeah. It was really,
and,
really good.
I got something to say, and I hope it was the poignant matter. And good luck to everybody. Thank you very much, John.
Hey, Bobby, good luck. And we'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. We'll talk to you soon.